The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, I wanted to talk a little bit about joy today, and then more specifically about mudita, which we usually translate by the English sympathetic joy or appreciative joy. We had a Dharma practice day on Friday on the practice of sympathetic joy, so it's kind of fresh in my mind. And so one of the delights for me in my encounter with Buddhist practice is the amount of joy that it has brought into my life. Certainly wasn't automatic and wasn't right away necessarily, but I feel that my life is much more filled regularly with joy, delight, than it probably would have been without the encounter of Buddhism. And the reason for that, there's a number of reasons for that, but I can point to a few, maybe it's interesting for you. One is that the activities of my mind that prevent joy operate much less than they used to. So, for example, if we're stressed out, there's not much room for joy. If we're anxious, there's not much room for joy. If we're preoccupied, caught up in our thoughts and concerns, there's not much space for joy. There's also not much space for appreciation, appreciating what's going on. If you're caught up with a particular thing, you don't notice the wider range of what's happening in the present moment. And in fact, when we're stressed out, anxious, upset, caught up, preoccupied, ambitious, greedy, chances are our attention is narrowed to the particular thing that we're interested in or worried about or focused on. And we don't notice a lot of other things. And in the present moment, there are a lot of things going on. And sometimes it's been pointed out, and I kind of believe that probably more often than not, this is true, that things usually, there's more right going on than wrong. So the question, you know, what's right with this moment, is perhaps a more relevant question than what's wrong with this moment. Because there's usually more right going on. But we focus often on the narrow sliver of the present moment, and that narrow sliver is often what's wrong. And so it's not that we have to, it's not to deny there are things that are wrong, not to kind of whitewash over it and just kind of now kind of be Pollyannish about everything and say everything, you know, we should just focus on what's right and ignore what's wrong. Buddhist practice is meant to be realistic and to take in realistically what's going on. But realistically what's going on is we're often preoccupied, many people, or when we're suffering and stressed out, we often are actually not seeing the full picture of the present moment. And so so one of the functions of mindfulness practice, of meditation practice, is to begin to relax those activities of the mind that keep us preoccupied, that keep us anxious, keep us caught up. So to settle down. And and to come down to a place where the mind is somewhat calm or settled, so that when we step back into the world, we are not so predisposed to see it through the lens of the preoccupation of the moment, the preoccupation of the day. So meditation is a little bit like clearing the field, clearing the lenses, so that we can begin looking with a blank slate, with a clear slate, or look more fully, more completely what's going on. So I like to think sometimes of meditation practice as moving the mind back to simplicity, moving the mind back to zero, moving the mind back to a time and a place, a way of being, where it's not preoccupied by anything. So there's a freshness, freshness and malleability and softness and openness, that they, you know, nowadays in the West we have this beautiful term, Buddhist term, beginner's mind, where we kind of, you kind of begin, a kind of this beginning awe or interest. What's here? What's going on? And so to come out of meditation, maybe a little bit more that way than when you went into meditation. And then, what happens? Sometimes what might happen is you can get immediately locked into your preoccupations again, quickly. Or if you're relaxed, and you stay a little bit relaxed, then we start perceiving what goes around us in a little bit broader way. We have a broader vision of what's happening. And it's not uncommon for people who meditate to come out of meditation and just feel kind of like things are still and quiet or peaceful or nice, relaxed. Or kind of just to kind of look at something that's maybe an ordinary thing you've seen many times and just kind of be a little bit amazed. Wow, isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing? I mean, I've had the experience, mostly on retreat, I think, of coming out of a meditation hall and seeing a piece of trash on the ground, candy wrapper or something. And rather than the mind getting immediately going, how could someone have, you know, discarded the candy wrapper, and this is a retreat center, and people are supposed to be mindful, and who do these people think they are? But rather, just kind of come out, and my mind doesn't go that way, that direction very quickly. Rather, it goes just kind of, it's almost like non-conceptual. It's like just looking at, it's quite beautiful, the candy wrapper. You know, it's a silver and shiny and has some nice colors, perhaps, and just kind of like, you know, just wow. You know, before, I think what I'm trying to say, I think that a relaxed mind, open mind, is not so predisposed to see what's wrong. And again, it isn't that there aren't things that are wrong sometimes, but I think that if we bias ourselves to focus on what's wrong, we miss out on the opportunities for appreciation and for joy, which are much more often. So recently someone told me that a little teaching that I did some time ago made a huge difference in her life. And it had to do, my little teacher, some of you heard this, but she was apparently plagued by insomnia. So she wakes up in the middle of the night and feels very anxious, and you know, it was a difficult time to wake up in the middle of the night for her. But I gave this little teaching once where I said, when you wake up in the middle of the night, the suffering you have around that, chances are, that's not always the case, but chances are that that some of the suffering around that has to do with anticipatory suffering. Anticipating what that's going to be like tomorrow when you wake up, not getting enough sleep. At least that's how it's been for me. And so I worry and I'm anxious, you know, I'll fall asleep giving a Dharma talk or something. And but if I pay attention to the present moment and mindful of what's actually going on when I'm awake in the middle of the night, I find that I'm often quite nice. I'm safe. I've usually had enough to eat. I'm usually warm under my covers. It's comfortable. No one's bothering me. I don't have to prove myself to anybody. I don't have to do anything. I just have to, you know, basically the situation is actually pretty cozy. Except for the mind that telling me stories. This means Gil, this means you will, tomorrow it'll be difficult, and you know, my mind will tell stories. And the stories, if I get caught by the stories, then I feel unhappy and anxious. But if I just focus on actually what's happening here and now, and let tomorrow take care of itself, who knows about tomorrow? I have a very bad record, extremely bad statistics around successfully predicting tomorrow. In the future, mostly because, you know, I have all these dire ideas about what's going to happen. But so anyway, so the idea of, you know, So in the, so this, you know, this woman heard this teaching that I gave, and it made a huge difference for her, because in fact she found that she was quite cozy and quite happy, and she found that by focusing on that rather than the anxiety about the next day, she would feel cozy and she would fall asleep. So what sliver, what segment of the present moment reality do we focus on? And how biased are we? How inclusive are we? What's going on? So one premise I'm offering today is that by sitting and being quiet, meditating, and letting the mind quiet down and not be caught up and preoccupied, it gives a freshness and openness to the mind to see more broadly what's going on here. And in doing that, it's simply the fact we're no longer caught so strongly by our preoccupations. We're not moving towards suffering, distress. We're more open, we're available. And then we might just happen to notice that there's more good going on. We might notice the candy wrappers are actually pretty. Silly idea, right? But we might notice that the sun is shining. We might notice that there's many things. There's actually a lot of things that we can notice in the present moment that might actually be good. But there's another choice, and that is the issue of choice itself. A very important part of mindfulness practice is getting mindful enough and settled enough that we can see where we have choice about where we direct our mind, what we do with our mind. We don't have to be in the passenger seats of our mind and just kind of go along wherever the mind takes us, think whatever the mind is thinking. We could actually have some choice about what we choose to focus on or think about or perceive what's going on around us. So coming out of, say, the example of coming out of meditation, you're calm, you're settled, the mind is open and relaxed, you've put aside your preoccupation and concerns. There's choice there. You can choose then, what do I want to focus on here in the present moment? What do I want if I open my eyes and look at? I have a wide range. So when I come out of meditation here at IMC and just sitting here with all of you, I could focus on a lot of things. I mean, for one thing, I could focus on we have this great building. And I'm delighted that we have this building. Imagine that. I remember when we didn't have a building of our own. And that, you know, we had this little place in Palo Alto where we met in the little library of a church. And we had to carry our stuff back and forth, and it was kind of crowded and claustrophobic, and now we have this room. It's beautiful, I think. And so, you know, maybe you don't want to go around spending your time thinking about rooms and space, but, it brings me delight to focus on that. And then I can focus on all of you. It's pretty awesome, I think, for me, that there are this many people who on a Sunday morning want to come and meditate and want to kind of hear the Dharma and come with your interest and sincerity. It brings me a lot of delight and joy, a lot of appreciation that this should be the case. Of course, I could be thinking about other things. I could immediately open my eyes and look at all of you and worry, with these people. These people are probably going to judge me, and I probably don't have a good Dharma talk, and I better kind of spruce it up here, and this is not going to be a good day, and I could kind of get caught up in my little preoccupied little self world, right? Do I have any choice about which direction my mind goes? As I'm settled and relaxed and mindful, I find I do have choice. And in that choice, I could certainly choose not to do some things, but I can also choose what direction is useful for me to go. And this is one of the principles of Buddhist practice. It's not simply about being mindful of what is, because what is actually a lot of different options. A lot of things going on in the present moment. And so if you just say, simply passively say, I'm going to be present for what is, who gets to choose what is then? Is it your mind? Is it other people? Is it the advertisers? What is it? And so one of the things Buddhist practice encourages you is to have some sense of a possibility, of a potential, some sense of a direction that you can go. And then to use and make your choices based on what supports that direction. And so your direction, hopefully, is a good direction that you've chosen. So the classic one in Buddhism would be to suffer less, to let go of your clinging, to experience the joy and happiness that's here. And maybe move in the direction of greater love, greater compassion. So then, so with those kinds of, as a kind of guidepost, then what do I pay attention to here and now? What can I do? What can I focus on here that supports me to suffer less, that supports me to have greater happiness, that supports me to have more compassion and love? And so then, what is supportive? So one of the things that's supportive is to have mudita. And mudita is a Pali word, Buddhist word, that, as I said earlier, usually translated into English as sympathetic joy or appreciative joy. The word mudita by itself means joy, delight, rejoicing, being pleased, being appreciating something. And it's the feeling that comes, feeling or sense it comes, when we see or experience something that we appreciate. So, and appreciate in such a way that it brings us a kind of delight or lightness or happiness or joy. So, you know, there's a lot of things that can do that. But, for example, this morning I walked down here and it brings me a lot of appreciation that I live close enough that I could walk to work, walk to IMC in the morning. It takes me about half an hour. And I feel so lucky. Now, I could just kind of be walking here kind of all grumpy and say, oh, no, I mean, you know, I better think of a good talk. These people, you know, this is scary. Certainly these people are so scary, they're going to judge me, and the risks are pretty high. And I'll say something silly like what I'm doing right now. And so I could focus on that, or I could, you know, focus on, you know, the appreciation of the walk coming down here. And so which of those conditions me? Which of those predisposes me in a good way? If I focus on my fear, speaking in front of a crowd of people, that conditions me in a certain way. If I notice that this is great, well, I'm so lucky, it's good weather, it's February in California, the trees are blooming, blue skies, and I get to walk. Isn't this pretty cool? This is nice. So I did that, walking down here for a few moments, and I could feel that nourishes me in a nice way, kind of actually nourishing for my heart to experience that. And that nourishment, that simple nourishment, is a condition for greater peace and greater calm, greater kind of openness. If I was worrying, being scared about giving this talk, that would condition something else. I wouldn't feel nourished in that case. So if the principle, if the purpose is, in the present moment, I would like to experience less suffering, more joy, what can I focus on that brings that about? And to some degree, it's really useful to focus on the things that you can appreciate. And for most of us, that just means expanding the horizon from our narrow sliver of reality we pay attention to just become aware of more. But what is it that we can appreciate? There's a lot that we can appreciate. If we're caught up in our little world, in our troubles and our difficulties, which might be real, sometimes we're blinded to how much good is going on, how much right is going on. Because I partly grew up in Europe, my parents were, I was born in Europe, in Norway, and I grew up with the generation before me of my parents were people who went through World War II. And I grew up with, you know, the Vietnam War. I was draftable, draft age. I wasn't drafted, but the idea of war was, and stories of war and people who went through war, was a big part of my growing up. And one of the things that I appreciate is that I've never been in a war. It's quite phenomenal. You know, and here we live in this California, in the peninsula, and I don't worry about tanks going down the street. I don't worry about bombs exploding. My mother got out of bed one morning when she was a young child, and I don't know when it was, 1942 or something. And in the second or two after she got out of bed, this huge piece of chaparral went busted through the window of her house and went right into the pillow where she was laying. A German boat had exploded in the harbor. And it was a munitions boat, so it exploded really well. And a piece of that boat landed in her bed. So, you know, there's a lot. So is that a valid thing to think about? Why should we think about that? I mean, that's so abstract. You know, Buddhism is about concrete, being present for what is. But actually, there's a lot of safety here. And I know that I could get caught up in the details of my little life. But I could also focus, and I'm reminded often of this because of how I was brought up, and I feel nourished by the safety that I feel here, relative safety. There's all kinds of ways in which people are not safe. You don't have to go back to the war, but there are communities in our society where people don't feel safe. But here I feel somewhat safe. Or I have a roof over my head. There was a time that I was homeless and I didn't have a roof over my head. So it's meaningful to have a roof and a home. And then I can focus on, well, the home's so small, and it's not big enough for these two teenage boys who are jumping off the walls, and I get caught up in that world. But actually, it's pretty cool. So we could choose. And so the appreciative practice of mudita is taking on as a practice periodically, sometimes, the practice of noticing what you can appreciate. And it's particularly the practice of mudita is to appreciate what you can appreciate with other people. What can you appreciate about others? And as you feel, what can you appreciate so that it brings you joy, brings you mudita? And so that it's nourishing for you. So that it nourishes you in such a way that it helps and supports, it makes it easier, the spiritual life. It makes it easier to be mindful and present, less caught up, less preoccupied. Do people have good qualities that we can appreciate? Maybe a few people have good qualities, right? Just a little bit. I would say, I believe, that everyone has good qualities. Even though sometimes they're not obvious. What is it like to actually begin focusing on what we can appreciate in people? What happens? Can we bring joy to ourselves? Can we bring joy to them? I think that one of the very important things about human psychology is that we mirror each other, we support each other. And to the degree to which we appreciate others, they feel appreciated. And if they feel appreciated for their goodness, for their what's good, that gets strengthened in them. If what we notice in people is what's wrong with them, and we have the great wisdom to point that out, chances are it's kind of a downer for them. Chances are it doesn't really, you know, if we complain a lot and say, you know, that things are, you know, what you're doing is wrong, and you know, it's kind of a downer. It doesn't really support what's good in them. So there's an art to a practice of focusing on what we appreciate. And part of that also is to appreciate when people have it good. When they're joyful, when they're happy, when they're successful. To appreciate they have a job. To appreciate that they have a home. To appreciate that they're your friend. To appreciate that, you know, that they have success in their lives. And so Buddhism has actually a practice that's done in meditation, a practice of appreciation, where the practice is to actively reflect on what we can appreciate in other people. Especially to appreciate when they have success, whether it's spiritual success, emotional success in terms of happiness and joy, or whether it's even material success, like, you know, they got a new job or got a raise. To rejoice, and so here the word mudita also means rejoice, to rejoice with them. To delight in it. And it said that this is a hard practice to do. They say that this experience of mudita, this practice of mudita, or the feeling of appreciative joy, is a rare phenomenon. People are much more interested in loving kindness. People are more interested in compassion. And people are more interested in the practice of equanimity than they are with the practice of sympathetic joy. Perhaps compassion is interesting because there's a lot of suffering. So we want to deal, we want to cope with the suffering. Compassion is a way. Equanimity is interesting because it's difficult to cope. And so we want to find some equanimity with it. And so we're all often dealing with life. And sympathetic joy, appreciative joy, maybe seems too Pollyannish, it seems not real, it doesn't really address the real problems and issues. So it's said in Buddhism that this is actually a rare practice. And also they said there's a lot of resistance to doing it. And the common resistance is envy and jealousy. Sometimes it has to do with comparing yourselves to others. You know, well, they're having success, but, you know, what does it say about me? You know, I'm still struggling, and I haven't gotten a raise in 10 years. And so then, rather than focusing on how good it is for them, we turn it around 180 degrees, and we use it to compare ourselves and feel bad about ourselves. Or, you know, wanting what they have, so envy, jealousy. So part of the practice of mudita is learning to recognize the resistance, the blocks to it, and relax and soften. And this is one of the delights of practice that I've experienced, is the increased capacity to share in the joy of others and the success of others, to rejoice with it, and not in any way refer back to myself. But just kind of like being an open channel, just say, wow, yes. It's kind of like saying, yes, this is great. Sometimes when people do this as a meditation practice, and it goes well, it brings on a lot of peace. It tends to bring calm and subtleness. The joy that's being focused on here sometimes is called serene joy, as opposed to the confused form of joy, and this is called giddy joy, or frivolous joy. Sometimes people start feeling joy, and they get kind of rather than continuing to focus on what they appreciate in the other person or what they're delighting in the other person, they focus on the fact that they're feeling delight. And then they get kind of giddy or a little bit frivolous, kind of, you know, this is great, I'm feeling kind of good. It's okay to feel good, but the pure form of mudita practice is you don't focus on yourself so much, get caught by that, but you let yourself keep being an open channel by focusing on the other person's joy and success, and just feel it, experience it, be with it. So, maybe that's enough. So, we sit to be mindful, and when we're mindful, we recognize we have more choice. And in knowing how to make choices, wise choices, we can choose based on what is helpful and supportive for us. The suggestion this morning is that it's helpful and supportive to choose to focus a certain percentage of your time, maybe more than you have, on what you can appreciate and what is joyful and what is good, with the goodness in other people. And what you might discover, that doing that has consequences. It changes how the situations unfold into the future. It changes, generally, an inclined situation to unfold in better ways than if you were inclined to focus on what's bad or wrong. If you're inclined to focus on the good in some other people and appreciate the good in other people, that part of them tends to come out more strongly. And they come out more strongly towards you, and you benefit. So, I hope that this talk suggests a way for you to have more joy today. And that as you go into the day, that maybe you reflect and think and be challenged to bring in more appreciation, more sympathetic joy, to notice what's good, notice what's right, and let yourself be nourished by that. So we have about 5 minutes or so before the scheduled time to end. So does anyone have any comments, questions, reservations, protests?
I read the Mercury News on Friday and Saturday, and of course they're awash with the up-and-coming IPO for Facebook and the immediate billionaires coming up. And I have aversion to, I mean, sympathetic joy is a good practice for these up-and-coming billionaires who, you know, are making all this money on chatting with each other. I don't know. Advertising. So anyway, that's...
It's possible that the better, the more appropriate attitude is not sympathetic joy, but compassion.
But they have succeeded in some ways, and, yes. And we immediately sort of, or at least I do, sort of vilify them.
Yes, I mean, So this is interesting that to the degree to which the attitudes that we have here in the West towards wealth is interesting to a story. There's a whole range of different attitudes people have. Some of them have to do with status. Some of them have to do with comparisons to other people. Some have to do with vilification, you know, that wealth is bad and all that. And so it's certainly worth looking at. If we go back to the time of the Buddha was quite appreciative of legally or morally attained wealth. He thought that was a worthwhile thing to do, was to become wealthy if it was done in moral ways. He hadn't read Marx. And so, it's good karma. It's something to actually feel happy for when it's raised in a good way. And then a little bit the question is, what do the people do with their wealth? And they use it in a way that provides more happiness and well-being, something we can rejoice in, or not. And some people use their wealth in ways that, you know, you wonder, you know, this doesn't really seem something to really appreciate. And other people use their wealth in ways that brings a lot of joy and rejoicing. So I don't know if this answers your concern, but I don't know what we're talking about, but... but the what I'm talking about, but but the you know, we have a lot of different attitudes around wealth, and many situations in life are mixed. And so, what part of the mixed bag do we focus on? And so, do we focus on the part of the mixed bag that, you know, what's wrong, or do we focus on what's right? Do we have blinders one way or the other? Some people have blinders on, they only focus on what's right. And I remember there was a woman who came to IMC many years ago, who I took a lot of care, but I had to gently open her up to the fact that we were not living in a pastorally romantic world, that everything was beautiful and fine, and we were all supposed to float on the cloud. And she had a lot of resistance and a lot of fear, I think, to not, because she was holding on desperately to everything so beautiful and wonderful, and that's not the case. And so for her, I had to open, you know, to kind of take those blinders down, focus on the other. And then there's people who have blinders on the other way, what's wrong. And so then we gently try to open the other way. The idea is to be open to the full spectrum and range, and then to learn how to be wise about how to what to focus on. So if you're invited to a tastefully done party of someone who became a billionaire through Facebook, and their family's there and they're all happy, and the son's done well, you know, don't, you know, smile when you're there. One more here.
I struggle somewhat with a related issue. It's when I see someone who's done well by violating the natural order. And, of course, I guess I'm the one who gets to decide what natural order is. But early during the occupation of Iraq, I found kind of to my horror that I would hear of some terrible reversal for U.S. troops. And I would, you know, feel glad about this because somehow my natural order was being upheld. And I argued with some friends about this, sort of, who were more in favor of the war. And I used the analog, your child is using drugs and he's caught. How do you feel? And at some level, one could feel relieved that the child is not getting away with using drugs. But I don't think I'm seeing this clearly at all.
You know, these kinds of issues that you two of you brought up, I think are complex and multifaceted. You know, when we talk about our wider society and something like a war and countries fighting and major economic kind of startup companies and what goes on, I mean, and how it influences our society, it involves many, many, many factors to look at. And I can't sit here with you and explore all the different aspects of what goes on and what we should focus on. But I think how the practice can help is the practice can help us not be so caught up in abstractions, so that we can have an experience of relaxing and settling and then having this fresh, more of a fresh mind to see afresh and new. Sometimes when you have a fresh and open mind, relaxed mind, we see more realistically what's going on than we do if we're seeing through our abstractions. If you were at Iraq when the reversal of these happened, and you'd been meditating, you came out of your meditation, walked down the road to the village where they were fighting, and you saw the consequence of what had just happened, even though it doesn't matter who won or lost, I think that you'd feel heartbroken. And that's right. So I put a lot of trust and value in finding a beginner's mind, having a mind which is not caught up in abstractions and preoccupations. That's a basis for helping us think more clearly and accurately what's going on. How well we can think when things get more and more abstract in our complicated society and what we actually focus on. and understand, I mean, that's a whole other issue. I can't answer well, except that there's way too much simplistic thinking going on in our society. Simple answers for complex issues. And it's often very good to spend time doing research and understanding the wider ramifications of what's going on. But the foundation, I think, is often good to come back. Because if we have a good foundation of beginner's mind, then you're less likely to be biased when you do the exploration, investigation of what's going on in our world. That's what I think. Okay, so please know that I appreciate all of you. Thank you.